This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DG Ass on KMOX 206. Kevin, I bet you're a huge Hootie fan.
Yeah. Big time.
Look at his face.
Big time.
You are so affected.
I like this song.
You mean,
yeah, it's a great song.
By affected, you mean bored, yes.
No, he's not a Hootie fan. He likes it more when Darius Rucker started doing country music.
Ah, I forgot that. I mean, he is a big Darius country fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not about that.
Hootie and the Blowfish here. Life. Robert Mesko says he misses Tri-City Speedway. Brother, I bet we saw each other there. I was there all the time. And fun fact, where I grew up in South Arxana, you could hear Tri-City Speedway in Granite. It was just cool. Lisa loved Candy Bills, and Diane Franklin says Grandpa Pigeons.
What's
that was
Grandpa
fun.
Pigeons.
It was, gosh. So Venture was at the top, then Kmart, then Save Mart, and then Grandpa Pigeons.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, kind of dirty and dusty, but fun for kids. Like for me, they had really super cheap electric guitars. I used to just ogle and things like that. Mm. All I know is that I had a case one time where a toilet fell, a toilet fell off like a top shelf and landed on a lady. Yeah.
At the Grandpa Pigeons?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's no good.
Mm. Like, unfortunate.
Like a cartoon.
Oof.
Okay. We try to avoid it, talking about politics and talking about Donald Trump in particular, but I need a couple rulings.
Okay.
And I'm going to say something nice about Donald Trump, so get ready. But first, I'm going to say something I didn't like. If you haven't seen the AI-generated video, Trump Gaza, I don't know who created it, but it was posted originally by Donald Trump. And I showed the guys the video today at lunch, and it features war-torn Gaza and kids looking for food. And then it is Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu sitting on the beach. And then it's these huge golden idols of Donald Trump. And then it's literally cash raining from the skies on the beach, and Gazan children grabbing the cash. Now, if you want to say I have Trump derangement syndrome, on this one, I'll agree. Like, if he's trolling me, he got me. And I'm talking about it on the air, and he wins. But I don't care if the person is MAGA or Mitt Romney Republican or AOC. I don't care. I don't care who or what the political stripes are. When you're making AI videos of you being a golden god in a foreign country and money falling from the sky, like, don't do that. Just don't do that. Before I move on to my next one, anything to say about the video since you guys saw it?
I mean, I thought it was pretty gross. I'm not, like, upset about it in that it's ruining my day or anything, but I mean, I find it to be a ridiculous and gross thing.
So let me ask a question. How do you think that gets played with extremists that are already looking to
attack us? Silver platter.
Not great.
How do you think that plays with people that already think we're too involved in the business of the Middle East? Well, with people that don't like that we are so aligned with Israel. And again, I'm not saying they're right. That is not the point. You just slapped a kick me sign on the back of your country for no reason. For no reason at all. There's no benefit to putting that out there. If you think it's just, well, he's just trolling people, that's fine. But you know what? If that ends up at some point being part of the motivation for someone, because keep in mind how it's going to be used, right? It's not going to be used with intellectual honesty on the terrorist side. They're not going to be like, ah, we're not going to use that. He was just trolling. They're going to play it up to be more than it was. They're going to say, see, they want to colonize the Middle East, and they're going to start with Gaza, and they're not going to stop. And that's how they're going to play it. And that's so if there's an attack on a U.S. military base overseas, or if there's another attack on American civilians, and we're basically egging them on, how is that in any way a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, how can it be interpreted any other way than we want to take this tragic situation where tens of thousands of people lost their lives and homes have been reduced to rubble and people who want to come home have no home to go to, then we're turning it into a beach resort with money falling from the sky. Like, there's really only one way to interpret that.
So my second point, I have three, is something I can't find a reason to be mad about it. And that is Trump negotiating to get the rare earth mineral rights from Ukraine that we paid X hundreds of billions of dollars. And you guys are going to pay us back by giving us the rights to these rare earth minerals. I'm okay with that. Like, that seems pretty smart that we're not just giving the money away. And you can say, like, well, we're kind of kicking them while they're down. But I don't know. That one doesn't bother me so much. How about you guys?
I only know about it what you just said about it, so I'm not going to weigh in too hard.
Yeah, in principle, I mean, if I were looking at it, I'm a Ukrainian, or if I'm in the Ukrainian government and I'm told even in advance, hey, we can give you money, but we can't just give you money. Here's the cost. We'll basically buy these from you. You can use that money to do all this. It's not an insulting thing. It's not a terrible thing. But are you going to try to get more favorable terms for them?
Yeah,
are you still trying to triple it?
Like, yeah, I mean, if we gave them $500 billion, we're going to get $1.5 trillion.
Right, but I mean, are we saying you also have to take the loss, and the country that invaded you gets to keep what they took?
Probably.
But I mean, well, why is that? I mean, that's the part I don't like. If we're helping them, quote unquote, helping them, then why are we telling them you have to bow to aggression? Who crossed whose border at the beginning of this?
Yeah, I think that clearly Donald Trump is using the leverage that you guys are pretty much out of money and this is what it is.
Yeah.
You're not going to win the war, quote unquote. You're going to have to give up some land.
Yeah.
And we'll keep you fighting. You'll live to fight another day, but we want this secured. So I think that's just the long and short of it.
I mean, that's a business deal, right?
Yes. The one I'm not sure about. Have you heard about the $5 million gold card?
Yes.
Okay. So for those of you who haven't heard, people who are trying to immigrate to this country can get a green card. And I don't understand the ins and outs of a green card, but I know that if you have one, you can be here legally. And so Trump announced yesterday they're going to have a gold card, which it costs $5 million. And that gives you your green card plus some extras, whatever that means. And he's doing that so that we can make money. And so that it brings rich people here instead of poor people and people who will invest in the country. This is the one I'm not sure how I feel about.
Hmm.
What do you guys think?
I'm a little nervous because he said that nice Russian oligarchs can use the golden card, which it's like, that doesn't sound great.
Only the nice ones, Rach.
Yeah, how are we making that measurement? Like, not all Russian oligarchs, but the ones that we think are nice, like they get to come into our country. I mean, it's very like Trump logic as far as like they're going to come in, they're going to spend a lot of money, they're going to create a lot of jobs, and it's going to be worth it at the end. I mean, I don't see why you are somehow more deserving of being here if you can spend $5 million.
Yeah, I don't. Again, I'm just reading between the lines. I didn't take it as deserving. I took it as an absolute, hey, In America, we want successful people, smart people, people with money to invest, not a bunch of refugees. So let's do this. It's going to cost you money, but you can go to the front of the line.
Legitimate question. Do people with the kind of wealth to do what we're talking about, do they come here to give money or do they come here to make money?
Yeah, I mean, I
don't know how to answer that.
I mean, the wealthy people that can afford these things aren't coming here to say, here's my money, guys. Yay. They're coming here to make more than what they already have. That's what these wealthy people do.
So you don't think we need one more oligarch?
I'm not saying that you don't. It's fine in general, as long as they pass every other check mark, right? As long as you got to do everything else that you would normally have to do to get the green card, right? Pass a security check, do all the... I mean, I don't know all of the ins and outs, but as long as it's the same in that regard, and it's not just 5 million, do not pass... do not go to jail, you go straight to go. I mean, like, you got to have the vetting to go along with it. You still have to have the same standards. And if there's an extra bonus or something, that's wonderful. But, I mean, I'm torn because, again, who are we talking about? Are we just talking about the business magnate who's worth $20 million, but he wants to do business here because he's not in a stable place and he'll give up the $10 million per family member or $5 million per family member to make that move? Or are we talking about the billionaire who wants to take advantage of the free market and make money here? And is that person deserving of coming in and taking from other people that already live here? Are they, this is, I guess, my point. Are they giving or taking? Are they adding or subtracting? I don't know. I'm not an economist, but I would like to hear the opinions of people that study that before I would decide.
And I'm getting into Donald Trump's mind here, but I don't think it's much of a stretch. I don't think he would care. I don't think he would think that far ahead that, well, wait a minute. This person may pay us our $5 or $10 million, but then they might make more money than they actually put into the economy. I don't think he cares.
No, and there's no requirement that you have to create jobs, like as of now with this golden card. He is very much rolling it out as like, this will be a way to reduce the deficit because so many of these rich people will want to come in and will make trillions of dollars doing it.
I'm trying to think. So let's put it this way, like 5 million. So how many of these people have to come in to get to a billion? Right?
A lot.
I mean, 1,000, right? So
I don't think you can do that math.
I'm just, not live on the radio. Math live on the radio is terrible. But you're talking about having to have tens of thousands of people to make up the differences in that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe I'm just naive, but I was raised, at least the history education I received was... the tired, huddled masses, right? Like, that's...
bring me your poor.
They're supposed to be just as important as someone with money. And I just don't understand why it's like, oh, you have money, so you're golden. I understand they have these like, tiered systems in other parts of the world. But I thought in the United States, it was an equal opportunity for everyone.
I mean, like, well, the way we're painted, and I think this is actually true to me, it is... like the American dream of an immigrant is, you come here, you don't have something and you build it because it's the land of opportunity, as opposed to you made a lot of money somewhere else and now you pay your way over here. And again, I don't even have a problem with that. It's like, it's not the end of the world if a wealthy person wants to immigrate to the United States. Are they going to pay taxes? Or are they going to be using the loopholes to get around paying taxes? And again, I don't have any idea. I don't know. I would love to hear from someone who studies economics that would say this kind of a plan would be a boost and would help the average American citizen. Because all I care about, I don't care about left or right. I care about working class people because we are the vast majority of the United States and we get ignored. We have too many favors being done for wealthy people. Wealthy people are wealthy. They're okay. They can figure their own problems out.
224 DGS, my favorite Huey Lewis song. You know, he used to come down to the hotel bar after every show they played when they were huge. And he would say, okay, as long as everyone's cool, I'll just stay down here and drink with you guys for a few hours. But if you start fanboying out, I'm going to go upstairs. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've always heard he was cool.
Yeah.
It's not my thing, but I've always heard. I like people that seem like they're cool people.
Yep.
So I like Huey.
We like cool people, Rach. How about you?
Well, he looks cool because he's got his sunglasses on and he's kind of got them down on the bridge of his nose.
Like, oh, yeah?
Looking over the glasses.
That's a cool look.
Is he
hip to be square?
I mean, he's got this red blazer on. He looks good.
Razor's Edge?
Yeah. So would you guys rather talk about DoorDash or would you rather talk about the newest AI-powered assistant from Amazon?
Kind of hear your DoorDash.
Okay. So I'm feeling conflicted about DoorDash because recently DoorDash was ordered to pay $17 million to their drivers for pocketing their tips.
What?
An investigation found that the delivery platform used customer tips to subsidize workers' pay. So now they have to pay $16.75 million in restitution and up to $1 million in settlement administrator costs. So DoorDash was keeping tips intended for workers and deducting them from their guaranteed pay. Now, since then, DoorDash says, okay, we've changed our pay model and Dashers now keep 100% of their tips. But like, why were you doing that in the first place? It seems like such a bad deal for the workers.
Yeah.
And it just got me thinking, like, how ethical is it to use these gig work services, really? I always look at it as, hey, everyone who's doing it doesn't have to do it. They're all making a choice. But if they're being exploited along the way, should I be participating in this at all?
I think what's interesting about that is I've criticized people who know better about Donald Trump but support him because it gets them reelected and it serves their own purposes. On a much smaller level than that, I'm hypocritical because I think Amazon is terrible for small businesses and I use them. I think DoorDash just seems like a bunch of D's, but I get McDonald's delivered, right? So I do things I know I shouldn't do for the greater good because they are convenient to me in the moment.
You're not alone.
Yeah, definitely not alone.
I mean, for all the people that like to complain about, you know, a lot of stuff being made in China, they're still buying at Walmart. I mean, and again, I get it because most normal people have to make the decision. Do I want to have $100 left over after this shopping trip or do I have nothing left over at the end of this shopping trip? And for a lot of people, that those choices are a big difference. So, yeah, I think we all compromise on stuff like that.
The thing about DoorDash, though, is there doesn't seem to be a great reason to use it as a consumer unless you're like when we were sick a couple weeks ago, used that and Uber Eats a lot because it's like, all right, I don't have to cook. So this is great. Food just shows up at my doorstep. But other than that, you're paying more for someone to deliver you like lukewarm food. I'm not over here saying it's bad. I mean, Andrew did DoorDash and he really liked it. I'm just saying whenever I see a company exploiting people like this and then they're like, oh, but don't worry, we don't do that anymore. Well, why should I trust you to not do it in the future?
Beppy Cat always has something interesting to say. It says, I'm curious why we all think small businesses are inherently more moral than large ones. I do, too. I just don't know why. That's a Wheeler question.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty simple thing. If you get a bad reputation as a small business, you go out of business. It's that simple. Like, your business is on the line every time you do a transaction, because if you get a reputation for cheating people, for providing a bad product or whatever, then people just stop going to you. But if you're Amazon, if you're Walmart, I mean, I'm not just picking on those, but like, if you're a massive corporation, you're just not at that same risk.
Yeah. Welcome back, guys. DGS 233. Happy Wednesday. Another pretty day out there. We have Monty and Byron, both representatives of the Spectrum Scholars. And we just want to give them a nice glamour shot here. They're doing something cool, and we wanted to support it. So great meeting you guys. Great talking to you. A couple of Eastsiders. I like that. Monty, roll it out. Tell us what this is all about.
Well, thank you for having us. Go SIU.
There you go. Both go
of
Cougars.
Them, both of them. Spectrum Scholars, it's our annual scholarship program, professional development program for college students with a financial need. Those selected receive a $20,000 scholarship, participate in a two-year professional development program, a mentorship experience, and a paid internship. So it's really more than just a scholarship program. It's we're kind of empowering the next, you know, generation of leaders. To be eligible, you have to be a rising college junior, pursuing a bachelor's degree in a select variety of areas, and present demonstrate a financial need, Applications are due April the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're a college student that lives here in St. Louis Metro, obviously Illinois, you're still eligible, even if you go to school away from home. And applications are due April the 4th. Anything, any information on eligibility about the program, you can go to our website, corporate.charter.com/spectrum scholars.
Cool. How much of it is based on metrics like you have to have great grades already, or can you be like a C student like I was?
I'm sure that plays into all of it in the application process. I think, you know, the biggest thing is to find people that just need that little extra help. And again, this is a great program because you get $10,000 for your junior year and for your senior year. And so you kind of go through the process, and Byron can probably tell you a lot more about that because he was a perfect candidate for it.
Yeah, Byron, just tell us your story.
Yeah, I'm a recent graduate of SIUE. I majored in info technology, and just a little bit about me. I'm all about technology. I've been on the computer every single day pretty much since I've been able to get one. Mom got me one for Christmas, like in fourth grade, ever since then. Just been nothing but technology, and majored in college, and I applied for the scholarship, and I got it. I applied through Scholarship America, and I just happened to get it. And the program, it's a really good program. The mentorship was the best part of the program because you're paired with the actual professional that's been in the industry for a long time. And me coming from college, you know, college classes are great. You get that, you get theories that you can apply, but the real in-life job experience, you want to have that perspective. So when you actually get a job, it won't be so different, right? So I was they gave me a mentor. He mentored me for the 2 years in the program. And the internship was also a huge part of the program because I worked with many other professionals besides my mentor. And as far as the internship goes, turning into a real job, they want to hire people. So about 90% of the people that were in my internship class, they got hired. So, like, I have somebody that works across the street that was working on the internship with me, and he also got a job, right? So they're looking to hire people. They're looking to give you a fresh start to your career. So I highly recommend this program. Of course, the financial part, the mentoring part. Not only that, you can build connections with other scholars. To this day, I talk to my mentor. I also talk to a lot of other scholars. A whole bunch of LinkedIn connections. I went from like 50 to like 500 plus LinkedIn connections. So there was that. So it's just overall a wonderful program, and you should apply.
And what you say about having a mentor, I wasn't much of an academic, especially in college. Like, I never went to office hours. I never talked to professors. I just didn't know that was a thing. Mm-hmm. And it really hurt me. Like, I look back now, and I'm like, that's so stupid. And then even in law school, I went from SIU to law school, and I still didn't do that. And when I became a lawyer, I was just like, I don't know what to do with my hands. I don't know what I'm doing here. I know you taught me all this stuff, but I don't have a bridge between what you taught me and what I'm getting paid for. And that's what you're talking about, is getting that bridge of, okay, I got all the theory, and now some guy's writing me a paycheck every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. How does one relate to the other? That's so critically important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is the fifth class of the Spectrum Scholars that we've done. More than 1.5 million in scholarships have been awarded through this program since 2020. So it's an ongoing thing. And it's, you know, again, St. Louis being, you know, such a the heart of, you know, Charter Spectrum, and, you know, again, finding great candidates, it just increases our workforce. It just makes it better for the whole community and for the company. It's a win-win.
Yeah. So there's still a chance this spring. Up until April 4th.
April the 4th, yes. You can go on the website, thecorporate.charter.com/spectrumscholars, and the application is on there. It'll have more information about eligibility, and you can fill it out. And, again, you've got about another month or so to get on there and sign up.
Byron, what do you want to do ultimately? What's your dream job?
My dream job is I want to be doing the same exact thing, but remotely in another country. Like, because I've always lived in the Midwest, right? I want to, like, explore the
branch
world.
Branch out, brother.
Branch out to different countries, Brazil, South America, Europe, explore some parts of Asia, the Philippines. I want to be able to do what I like to do, what I love to do, but just in a lot of other places, basically being on vacation 24/7, but still having a job, you know?
I like that.
I want to do a Freaky Friday and change bodies with Byron. Yeah. I want to saddle him with being a 60-year-old dude. I want to have the world as my oyster. You know, you got it pretty figured out. Good for you.
Yeah.
That's great. Websites, phone numbers, things like that where people can go?
Again, corporate.charter.com/spectrumscholars. Obviously, you know, the regular website, you can find about all of our other products and services and everything else that we do. We do a lot of other, you know, charitable giving in the community, a lot of grants and things like that for different nonprofit organizations. So there's a lot of good being done. Again, I think, you know, Byron has been great. I've been taking him to several news outlets, and he's not like us where he's used to all of this, but he's been doing phenomenal. Yeah. So I think after this he'll be a pro. So maybe you could switch spots.
Yeah, maybe so. He'll be taking my job.
The Byron Coulter Show. Yeah.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. Good luck.
Of course. Thank you.
Happy Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for joining us on the stream, on YouTube, and on Facebook. So it's well established that I'm weird and anxious and quirky. And I have things like, and I think a lot of people have this, that if you talk about blinking your eyes, like you have to blink your eyes, or if someone talks about a heartbeat, now I can feel the heart beating in my chest. I had the weirdest one ever last night. I'm just sitting there doing show prep, watching television, and I became super hyper aware of holding my head up.
That is a weird one.
Right? And suddenly my head just felt so heavy. And I'm like, how have I done this for 60 years? And like, it took me 30 minutes to become distracted by something else shiny. But that whole 30 minutes, I'm just like, I don't know if I can keep on doing this. I'm going to have to figure out how to live my life with my head on my chest.
You're like, has something changed? That's Do I so actually weird. Have to think about this?
Yes. Yes. It's crazy. Why do I admit these things?
Well, better than not, I think.
You think?
Yeah, because then it gets in your head more. You know how it is. Sometimes you got to let it out.
Yeah, there you go.
If you keep stewing on it and you don't say it out loud, then maybe it just keeps on
I really
keeping
do
on.
Hope these things make people feel more normal, where they're like, well, I got some problems, but I'm not like this guy trying to hold his head up.
I got news, man. There is no normal.
What's in the world of sports? What do you want to talk about?
I mean, yeah, we can go Cardinal stuff if you want.
You know, I'm always up for Cardinal stuff.
There's Max Scherzer did a little yelling at clouds yesterday, if you were interested at all at that.
I watched the game. I didn't pick up on that, but he didn't seem happy.
So after the game, he's like, I don't know what we're doing with this ABS system. I don't like it. It's a human element. Like, he was mad because he got a couple wrong. You know, I mean, his catcher fooled him, right? His catcher framed one up and made it look better than it was. The umpire called it a ball, which was correct, and he challenged it and lost. And he's like, stupid machine. And it leads me to a bigger thing. Like, why would you oppose anything that is
empirical?
That's not invasive, doesn't change the pace or the course of the game, but make sure that the biggest mistakes get fixed. Why would that be in any way a bad thing for anybody, anywhere, anyhow? I don't understand
that. I think
that.
Max is one of those guys, St. Louis boy, right?
Yeah.
I think Max is one of those guys that doesn't care about that stuff. He just wants to win every game, every pitch, every call.
But this could help him.
Could.
He could get hosed on a call with the bases loaded and two outs in the seventh inning of a game, and it could be ball four, and he walks in a run, and then he challenges, like, nope, strike three, you're out, inning over. Like, it's not necessarily going to help or harm any individual person. It's just the idea that the biggest mistakes can be fixed. Why would anybody be against that? Now, I can understand being against it if it's something like a replay system where you have to wait 3 or 4 minutes and you're just standing around. This is a few seconds. Mm-hmm. This takes no time at all. This is not going to change the pace of the game. And in what other walks of life do we just accept imperfections when we can correct them?
Mine. All of it.
Oh, I'm talking about like businesses and like, so like back in the day, special effects in movies didn't look as good as they do now. Does that make it better? Should they not look as good as they do now? Would it be better if they looked like they did 35 years ago?
Do you like the system, or do you think it should be there all the time?
I mean, I don't think it's good enough yet And the players don't like it, which is interesting. Players that have used it in the minors didn't like the full automated, because they did do that.
Mm-hmm. Did they even have umpires behind the plate?
Yeah, they have to be, because you're going to have to call safe and out on plays and fair and foul. And
were they
like
calling
that.
Balls and strikes?
No, they're not. They would be the one that would announce it. They would get a cue from a thing in there that
says
ball or strike.
That's got to be dehumanizing to the umps.
So? I mean, seriously, so? You're there to enforce the rules. You're not a part of the game. Right? You're not a part of it. You're just there to make sure it's a fair competition. That's literally the job.
So maybe I'm being like a little obtuse right now, but if we have the technology that tells you whether it's a ball or strike every single time, why is it that we're still relying on umps to do that?
Because the dumb humans don't trust it.
Okay.
That's what it is.
So it's like a self-driving car.
Right. Like, so it's a lot safer than that, right? You're not gonna run somebody over, right? That's the difference between it. And I think most people would agree that the technology's probably not quite ready to go for every pitch, everything, all the time. But it was just a feel thing. Players and coaches and managers in the minor leagues did not like the feel of that as much as they liked this current version, which is just the challenge system to get a few things right.
So I think you know me well enough now. I'm kind of a purist. I would be fine if there was no technology. I would be fine if it was 1970s rules and technology. I like the game. I like the umpires. I like them missing calls. It's just part of it to me. But it seems to me that we must have the technology that you could get rid of every umpire. You could put chips in every toe of every cleat. You could put chips in the ball, in the gloves. You would know whether the tag was made or not. Like, we could do all that. And if we can't do it now, in 10 years, we could definitely do that. If it was right all the time, would you be in favor of that?
Yeah, why would I want error if I can eliminate it?
I guess I embrace error.
Yeah. I mean, but in a competition, though, I don't want someone's subconscious bias deciding the outcome of a play or a game. I don't want a team to win or lose a game because somebody is a human and they have a subconscious bias that they don't necessarily want to have. They just do. You know, people think of umpires like they're just choosing these things. They're not. It's the subconscious. Mm-hmm. It's about expectation. We talked about this with the strike zone, right? You know, the better the player, the more favorable calls they get. That's a fact. Greg Maddux had a bigger strike zone than every other pitcher during his time because the expectation subconsciously was this guy throws strikes nonstop. So if it's close, your mind errs on the side of giving it to the guy that you believe in versus erring on the side of the rookie that you don't know and you don't have anything there. If we can eliminate that and just get the truest, fairest competition, isn't that the point?
So Gar says it wasn't a good day today, Wheels. 7-0 on the losing end, only 2 hits. My question for you is, I know that this is just a whole season of scrimmages. I know they're not playing to win every game. They're playing to see the players and put them in situations. But it has to be important to not get into the habit of losing.
Well, the Cardinals had the best record in the Grapefruit League in 2023, and then they went out and won 73 games in the regular season. There's no connection between spring success and regular season success. Because what you're seeing now are a lot of guys that aren't even going to be in the major leagues. Both teams. Guys that you're not going to face in the big leagues and guys on your team that are not going to be there. And nobody's at full speed. They're literally at the beginning stages of a marathon. You know, you're at mile 2 of the 26 miles of a marathon getting ready for the regular season. So that's the hard part. Now, if you're getting to later in the spring, if you're getting to the last 6, 7, 8 days, and those are the times where the regular players are playing pretty much all the game, and you're using all major leaguers, and all the 19 and 20-year-olds have been sent back down to minor league camp, you can definitely learn more about it then, right? Like then, it's in fact, this is really interesting because this is a topic that Matt Pauly and I and Bernie and I have talked about in the Gas House Gang is, what in spring training can actually, what actually matters? What is informative? What does help you? And it does help you looking at young players. Are they doing the basic things? So if you got a young pitcher, is he throwing strikes? If you got a guy that's been trying to add velocity, did he? Right? Is he throwing harder or is it the same as it was before? Or somebody trying out a new pitch and how's that going? Like there are bits and pieces that matter. And for guys trying to win spots on the team, the results matter too. Right? But that's really not going to matter now until you, it won't matter until you get to the last week or two. And you see the accumulation of all of that. But then also, how do you finish? How do you finish when it is best on best, when it is every team running out just their major league starting pitchers and their major league relievers and their major league lineup, and see how it all sorts out there? I know it's hard because today stunk, man. The Cardinals had three hits. Tink Hentz got blown up, gave up six earned runs in a third of an inning. Yeah, it wasn't good. But, again, a couple hard hit balls, but also he had like a 62-mile-an-hour hit against him. That's really bad. Like 62-mile-an-hour, that's a doink. That's a blooper. That's a slow roller. There's nothing special about that. If you can throw the ball faster than that, it's not a very strong, not a very powerful hit. I could throw it faster than that, which means it's not a very powerful hit. And that's kind of the hard part, right, is how do you evaluate these things? And you can't really unless you're seeing what's happening and you're being very specific about what you're evaluating.
Cool. Quick break. Right back. DJS and KMOX.